course, folks, we are tuning right now to the Lunchtime Doctor. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Dr. Brittany Dean. And she has some very special guests today. Good afternoon, Doc.
Good afternoon, Base. It is great to be back in studio. You know, yesterday I was out.
Oh,
but
yes, on Zoom.
Yeah, on Zoom. But, you know, I love to be in studio. I feel more connected. And today I have some very special guests with me. I have Dr. Zakia Ram Singh, and I have Dr. Varma Dayal Singh, Secretary of the Association of Psychiatrists Trinidad and Tobago. So these are some very special guests, and we have a really good topic. So last week we talked a little bit about mental health because May was Mental Health Awareness Month, but June is Male Mental Health Awareness Month, right? Yes, so today we are going to be going a little more in detail about anxiety and depression. So I would like my guests to introduce themselves, and I'm sure the listeners would love to hear this conversation today. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Ram Singh.
Mm-hmm. Hi, so my name is Dr. Ram Singh. I am firstly a medical doctor. However, today, in this capacity, I'm actually representing the Rotary Club of San Juan. Mm-hmm. This year, one of our main goals was to highlight mental health in keeping with our theme of bringing hope. Mm-hmm. To tie off our Rotary year, I felt like it was very appropriate for us to come on and have a little discussion to continue the discussion that was already started on mental health. And I felt like it was very appropriate to invite Dr. Dayal Singh to join us, seeing that he has a wealth of experience and a wealth of knowledge to help us continue this very relevant discussion.
Mm-hmm. So Dr. Dayal Singh, could you introduce yourself to the listeners, and then we can get on with the conversation.
So first, mm-hmm. I might want to thank Dr. Ram Singh for having me here mm-hmm. in this very important topic. Mm-hmm. I am Dr. Varma Dayal Singh, a psychiatrist. I'm the secretary of the Psychiatric Association of Trinidad and Tobago and a former independent senator.
Okay, great. So in terms of this mental health discussion, so we've had this discussion prior on the show, but obviously in a more general capacity, and it's great to have a psychiatrist here so that we can delve deeper into this, because what we found is that a lot of people in Trinidad and Tobago, they don't understand mental health, and doing an episode like this breaks that stigma and it breaks that barrier between us and the knowledge that we need about mental health. Because when we think of mental health, and I think I've seen this in the general population, a lot of people tend to think it only refers to psychiatric disorders when we have so many other things, anxiety disorders, mood disorders, all of that. So can we just start off by talking a little bit about anxiety and depression, because it's something that we can't commonly see these days.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so definitely it's an important topic, mm-hmm. and more so since 2010, the World Health Organization mm-hmm. and the Pan-American Health Organization predicted that by 2020, depression would play a major part in the burden mm-hmm. of health and the monies that will have to be spent to actually curb these mm-hmm. disorders and to help these individuals. It is something that will impact on national budgets. So our government has also taken cognizant of that fact.
Yes.
So it's a global phenomenon. And what we have found is since 1990, mental illness has risen about 48%. And it's startling figures in the sense that, you know, we have depression. And there's depression occurring, and it's almost 300 million persons globally suffer from depression.
Yes, in that capacity, I know that we always tell our listeners it's one in four people are diagnosed or have a diagnosable mental health disorder. And can you speak on that statistic for me a little bit?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So basically, once you have an individual mm-hmm. who is exposed to stress, so there's the social stressors, unemployment, you financially you're struggling. Then there's the stressors of interrelationship. So, you know, you're maneuvering life with a partner who, you know, you're not the correct match. Then you have family issues where, you know, you have problems how to handle moms and dads, so that family issues. Then unmet goals. So let's say I had a goal and I'm not achieving that goal. Mm-hmm. That could make me depressed.
Yes.
That could make me, if I don't have a plan B or mm-hmm. a plan C.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also have comorbid illnesses. So let's say someone has diabetes or another illness.
Mm-hmm.
That and all could fuel depression. So there are a lot of causes and the genetic causes there. So you have to understand mm-hmm. that depression is something where, you know, once it sets in,
mm-hmm.
we now have to try to figure, is it some of the causes that we could now ameliorate? The state could do it too. If I'm unemployed,
mm-hmm.
I go to social services. I send them to social services, some of my patients.
Mm-hmm.
So they get that food card, they get that the grant, etc. If it's unemployment, I have been nudging the Ministry of Labor, have that group therapy where unemployed males could now meet and discuss, because mm-hmm. a male who has traditionally grown up in a home thinking, I am the breadwinner,
mm-hmm.
they feel emasculated where now I don't have a job, I can't feed my kids.
Yes.
That could fuel depression.
Right.
And a lot of males now, they handle depression different from females.
Mm-hmm.
They go in the rum shops, they go in the bar, they use alcohol to cope.
Okay.
And this is something we have to know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a challenge that we have to say, hey, males, we have talk shops, we have clinics, come on board. The stigma of being the old macho male is something that is really, that it's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though the females are twice as depressed as males, more males commit suicide than females.
Right.
And this is something where we look at Trinidad, we look at globally, more young males die by violence.
Mm-hmm.
No more males are dying by suicide. So males seems to be the endangered species.
Yes.
So even though you females here will say women's rights and women's this, I am looking at it from a different
perspective.
I'm saying, hey, our males are not even getting into universities as much as females.
Yes.
So we are looking at a society where if we don't pull up our socks in terms of male, because remember you mentioned next month is the male mental health, we are going to be in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where we have to now start looking ahead. So there are different causes of depression, and it's looking at the causes, trying to figure why every 40 seconds somebody globally dies by suicide. Eh? So this is something we have to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And a figure I would like the population, I'm thankful for this opportunity, between 15 and 29 year olds dying by suicide is the fourth highest cause of death.
Wow.
So imagine you have a young child. You have a young brother, sister, you know. So
mm-hmm.
we're looking at four to fifth causes. So therefore, I have three children in that age group.
Yes.
So I am equally concerned.
Yes.
So we need to develop things that would help the male.
And you mentioned a lot about stress. But of course, I mean, as a society, as a public as a whole, we do experience stress every day. I mean, there's nothing we can really do to escape that. I mean, unless you're living in a utopia, you know, you will get some sort of stress. Can you tell our listeners how to differentiate between stress and an anxiety disorder or a depressive disorder?
Mm-hmm.
Because some people may say, well, I'm stressed.
Yes.
Maybe I have an anxiety disorder, or maybe I'm depressed. But is there a difference, is there a stark difference between that stress and that anxiety disorder or depression?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's what you call good stress. For instance, I have an examination and I have not been studying. Now, if I now start to get stressed out, I will sit down and try and get myself organized.
Mm-hmm.
So that could motivate me. Where stress comes a problem is where you have these feelings, these physiological sort of feelings that it's now starting to overburden you.
Yes.
So therefore now you can't function, you can't move, you can't, you're not going anywhere. It's like you have a car in a garage with the engine on and you're not moving. So then when you look at anxiety, so there's stress, which can happen, and stress by itself, you have relationship problems, you'll get stressed.
Mm-hmm.
But if that is going on too long, the period of time, if that is now affecting your social life, then we now consider it something now running into the realm of anxiety. So anxiety really, it's a situation where someone may think that they are feeling overwhelmed, they are worrying all the time, they are nervous, and having those feelings, worry, nervous, for something that might be an impending situation. So like, let us say I have an impending situation, I have to give a speech, and I can't go to give that speech because I'm only worrying about that. You know, then that brings on me certain three conditions. It brings the cognitive component where I figure, oh, if I go and make that speech, people will be looking at me, they'll criticize me, I'm immediately looking good. Besides the cognitive, the thought processes, which may be unhealthy, which we change by our cognitive behavior therapy. Besides that, the other component is a physiological change. So now I start to sweat. I start to have nervousness. I have to have palpitation. I now, you know, can't sleep. And there now, the symptoms that comes in where typical anxiety will come in, where, you know, you may present by a general practitioner with these symptoms, thinking it's thyroid, thinking it's something else. And this time it's really that.
Just
and after that now, besides the cognitive aspect and the physiological response, which we typically know, sweaty palms, anxious, then you now have the component where behavior. So I don't want to go outside. I don't want to go to my exam. I want to be locked in because I figure if I go outside, you may have phobias, different things. You know, so it's really when it begins to affect you socially, when it begins to affect you and it's lasting too long, that we tend, and sometimes we look at a 6 month period because remember you may have individuals that may, for instance, I may have something that could be a stress factor to me, like something that, but another individual may have the support service. That person may go to church and say, I leave things into God's hand. A next person may go to OBR and say, well, you perform your whatever with your and I'll get back my boyfriend.
Yes.
So different persons, and sometimes culture takes a part in our treatment too. Because if that helps someone,
definitely.
Once it's not harming them,
we
say, well, that plays a part, but we may also have to play a part by being there for your mindset. Trying to discourage using alcohol as a method.
Okay, great. And now we'll just take a little break and Bass will bring us back in.
Right, folks, of course, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. LSA Healthcare Services Limited is a commercial hygiene service provider with 20 years experience in the industry. LSA's goal is to change the culture of hygiene by educating their clients about hygiene solutions for all spaces. Hygiene is essential for all organizations, staff, and customers' well-being. Is your business committed to high standards of hygiene? Check them out for the latest innovation in hands-free sanitary bins, hand washing solutions, odor control systems, a hand towel and jumbo toilet paper dispensers, sanitizing dispensers, janitorial cleaning, and fogging sanitization. Contact LSA Healthcare at 675-3466 for a free assessment. Visit their website at lsahealthcare.com and social media pages on Facebook, IG, and LinkedIn. LSA Healthcare Services Limited, your partner in hygiene solutions.
Your eyesight is everything. Let the experts at Dalton Brown Optometrists take care of it for you. They are the highest quality technology to provide a range of eye exams such as pathology screening, visual field testing, glaucoma screening, and much more. Just ask. They'll also provide a range of stylish and practical spectacles, frames, and sunglasses for all ages and soft contact lenses, colored contact lenses, and hard contacts. To meet your needs, contact Dalton Brown Optometrist today at 667-3115 for your consultation. Visit them on social media at Dalton Brown Optometrist and check out their locations at the corner of Queen and Sojano Street, Arima.
For the past 10 years, Health City Cayman Islands has been providing a comprehensive range of in-house medical services, from routine care to highly complex surgeries. We've transformed healthcare in the region, saving thousands of lives in the process. Recognized for quality and excellence, Health City brings together expert doctors, the best technology, and the latest techniques to provide world-class healthcare to those who need it. Health City Cayman Islands, a decade of healing.
Of course, Freedom 106.5 FM, Sankey 106.1 and Sky 99.5. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Feel free to message us. We're taking your WhatsApp messages only at 306-1065, or you can message us on Sankey and Sky 99.5 as well. So we continue with our topic of discussion.
Right. So continuing with the discussion, I just wanted to highlight, how could someone distinguish between temporary sadness and clinical depression.
Sure. So temporary sadness can come and go. For instance, let's say you have a death in your family. Bereavement is something we all know.
Mm-hmm.
And you may have that period where you feel sad, you feel, you know, it's my fault, you feel that what's happening now, you know, you're trying to explain it. Mm-hmm. But that comes and goes in waves. So it may go, and then it may be there for a while, but then the feelings will go. But then afterwards, now at the anniversary of the death or whatever, mm-hmm. you will now expect that. Mm-hmm. With depression, it lasts for a long while. And usually with depression, you find that, you know, how we really diagnose depression is we look for certain features and we look for it in a 2-week period. Now, bereavement could occur much longer.
Yes.
But with depression, it's a particular diagnosis where you have to have loss of enjoyment in something that you used to enjoy. So if I like to go cricket, I suddenly home there. Or I had a young 17-year-old stop playing games. Mm-hmm. And that was the first inclination to his mother. Right. Something is wrong with that child. Mm-hmm. So loss of enjoyment in things you used to enjoy. And then a general feeling, like most days of the week, or you're just feeling down, depressed the majority of the time. So those two things are what I may call red flags.
Yeah.
But with that comes on a change in sleep pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So some persons, if they are accustomed over sleeping, they now sleep less. Some people, if they eat more or less. So it's a change. So whatever that person was accustomed to, they change. So a change in sleep, change in sleep, something called psychomotor changes. So some person may walk up. Young children with depression, they may be more irritable, agitated, walking up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And other persons could slow down too. So changes in that. Thoughts of suicide, thoughts of harming yourself, these are other reasons where you look at that person. So so you're basically looking at that spectrum of certain symptoms coming on. You have to get 2 and 5 others, and then you say that's depression if it's lasting more than 2 weeks.
Right.
So it's the intensity. It's more intense. Now, even with for instance, I mentioned bereavement. Like, for instance, the Hindu religion, they may have a monthly prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes that person now focus on the next prayers. What do I have to get ready for the pundit? What?
Yeah.
And that is a way of healing.
Yes.
But what we have been finding, people have been moving away from religion. So you find the support systems you had before, the cultural support you had. Because long ago, we used to be living in homes where grandmother, auntie there. So everybody there used to take part in grooming a child and punishing him, treatment love. Now with persons living more isolated, you find that we are now getting younger persons who are not able to, you know, they're always on social media, so they're not able to look at faces, they're not able to take the boof, they still get a long time to play, because remember, it's a dangerous world we are living in.
Yeah.
So even a parent might say, I don't want you to go outside, there may be some pedophile out there. So what's hitting us now is the multi-generational unit that existed is something that brings us down. So therefore with depression, we are looking at that occurring, lasting longer.
Mm-hmm.
And we warn persons, if you see persons changing their eating pattern, sleep pattern, this is a warning sign to a red flag that you could reach out.
You spoke about children and teenagers, and yes, they would have changes in their patterns, but is there anything in particular that parents should be looking out for in terms of their children possibly being diagnosed with anxiety or depression? Is there anything in particular that children or teenagers may do that differs from adults?
Well, what we find is children may have the same changes I mentioned, but sometimes they may be more irritable.
Yeah.
So, and you see, this is where it's difficult to say, is this a child just growing up with hormonal changes who just rebelling?
Yeah.
Because most children, when they're growing up, they don't like religion. They find their parents old-time-ish, and they will have these anger outbursts.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see now it's lasting long, when you see a fallout in school performance, if you see the child trying to sneak alcohol and drink alcohol, if you see that child not socializing much with friends, those are signs. And the other thing is, I had a patient recently where he went on his computer looking at ways to harm himself.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, one of the siblings found that. So that was a red flag.
Yes.
Another one gave away his games. and told his family, you are a real good family to me, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's like preparing to go, you know, another one looking, what will happen after that? So when you're seeing a child changing like that or doing these things, it's certainly a red flag. But the challenge sometimes is sometimes to bring in a child. Mm-hmm. They will come to a therapist and just keep quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And you have, you're at wit's end to know how you're going to help this child.
Wow. Yeah, and that's an important point that you make there about social media and the increasing access of these platforms to our young population. And what would you say is really the impact of social media on the mental health of young people, of the population in general? Like, how does it affect mental health? And
well, some according to pediatric research. Societies recommend not more than 2 hours social media, right? And and they said you have to. You see, social media has its benefits, you know, because I have put children in who don't want to speak to me. On there's Mindful platform. There's one I think this Carrie Stargirl, I think, you know, one of those, Melissa Carrio, so I can't remember her name now.
Yeah.
She has a platform where it appeals to young children.
Yes.
So it's really, so it has that appeal. The danger is if now they don't look at life as something more than social platform. You see, if that comes the be all or end all, or they're addicted to it, then you won't into trouble. So we have to balance it.
Yeah.
So I tell parents, look, give them 2 hours, but let them go into some sports.
Yes.
Let them go into exercise. Because, you know, we found that for mild and moderate depression, exercise alone may help. You don't really need medicine. So we had compared some studies with taking Zoloft with some exercise, population exercise. Exercise helps. So therefore, it releases the endorphin and kephalins. So part of my treatment, if you're coming for depression, I am giving you an exercise plan.
Right.
No matter if you're an elderly person or a young person, you have to do that.
You know, I love that you said that because I promote that this on every single show. You see, preventative medicine, things like diet and exercise, and I always say that it will have some sort of impact on any disease that you will be diagnosed with, even if it's a mental health disease. Because what we have seen in our population is that they work together, they work in tandem. So if you are diagnosed with depression and anxiety, your physical health also suffers.
Yes.
And if your physical health is suffering, then you may end up being diagnosed with a mental health disorder as well.
Yeah, definitely. See, it's twofold. Eh? You remember, our population is at risk for diabetes. You will have, well, you medical person. So so right away, if I can start telling people this, let's starve off the depression by diabetes by starting exercise. That's one area. But you see, when you're exercising, I tell them the exercise has the benefits of, you know, you're looking yourself in the mirror, you're getting that self-confidence, you're seeing. So I give a progression. So if you could only, like, a 70-year-old came to me depressed because this lady suffers from what we call it, we basically, she's isolated.
Yes.
You know, so she, her husband died, her children all living abroad. So we call her the emptiness syndrome. So this lady living alone has no social contact. When she comes to clinic, it's the old talk.
Yeah.
We more old talk about how Trinidad was when she was young, when she went to some rally that I think Eric Williams had in the square. So she gives me history and I learn from her.
Yeah.
And I give her an avenue to talk.
Yes.
So sometimes we find that elderly persons, like 60, 70. Now, we have a elderly population in Trinidad. We have an aging population. So the percentage of people 60 and over is going to increase.
Yes.
We know that. Now, we have to realize that loneliness is a cause of depression. So how do we do that? I have tried with various ministries before to say they don't need to come clinic and use tablets. They need to go in a community center and do Tai Chi. They need to get to go on a tour to to the lake, you know, Pitch Lake. They need to engage with people their age.
Yes.
And that will starve off the dementia. They need to do that exercise. So sometimes it's not medicine. It's exercise and diet. Omega, omega-3 is like that. And then vitamin Bs is something that we recommend. So the school feeding program was important. So when Trinidad started their school feeding program, I was always pushing to them, yes. Give that fish, give that something. You have to give things because some of these children, they come from poverty. They really can't afford meals. Yes. So we have a fantastic thing, but we have to now taper our meals to help that.
Yes. No, because I always preach this. I'm like, my heart is so happy right now that you are saying this, because it is something that I preach every single day. Diet and exercise becomes such an important part of your regime. Yes, you may have to take medications at some point, but that does not omit your diet and exercise. Everything has to work together. And as we were talking about the physical manifestations of these mental health disorders, what can some people with anxiety feel, or what can they manifest physically?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you look at the broad spectrum of anxiety disorders, there are different types, right?
Yes.
So there may be obsessive compulsive has moved to a new regime. But you see, so sometimes you find some persons, they like to overwash.
Yes.
They figure they'll get germophobia.
Yeah.
Some of them have a ritual. They come in to switch off the light. They have to switch it off 3 or 4 times. So sometimes it manifests as these rituals that they have to do. We have children bathing for 3-4 hours.
Wow.
They think they have to get rid of the germs.
Mm-hmm.
We have adults going in. I have a CEO right now. When he goes in his office and he lays down his whatever, pens, etc.
Mm-hmm.
If the secretary moves one off, he throws a tantrum. So he has an order. So you look at those individuals. So then you have what you call the social phobia, where you don't want to eat in public.
Yes.
You think people looking at you and it's difficult. Then you have the phobias where people don't want to go out in public. They don't want to go out in terms of, like elevators, in closed spaces. So sometimes in those cases, you have to go back in the past. It's something happened to that child, locked in a cupboard when the child was small. Mm-hmm. So now the child has a fear of that. So it can manifest as even general anxiety, sort of way. You just have that apprehension, something going to happen bad today.
Yes.
I don't want to leave the house. I'm scared, but I just stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's where they get socially isolated. They just don't want to have any interaction. And there's where sometimes the friends and the families may pick up, hey, why they're not coming out to the office party? Why they're not coming to family events?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a reason now to say something is going on in that person's mind. So anxiety could present as these different facts. But remember, a lot of times, like a panic attack may present with your heart racing, you can't breathe, you figure you have an asthmatic attack.
Mm-hmm.
And they present to you guys in emergency.
Yeah.
And then they come once, twice, three times, they did ECG, X-ray, everything, and everything is normal. But it's a panic attack they're having.
Yes.
So we have to now teach them how to ground themselves, to, when it's happening, to recognize it. I had a patient on the highway, stopped in the middle of the highway because he was having a panic attack.
Mm. Wow.
And people all over driving. Police came to charge him. So that was another thing. And then he had to explain to the police, look, I am having a panic attack. I just didn't stop to obstruct traffic. So it's really educating persons that look out for our fellow men who maybe have it. Because it's increasing. Depression is increasing. Anxiety disorder is increasing.
We live in an increasingly stressful world.
Remember? Okay, long ago.
Yeah.
I used to recommend to my patients, go in the beach. The last patient I recommend going to the beach, they got robbed.
Yeah.
So this was a challenge I had. And being a senator, I was able to speak to it. I say we need safe spaces.
Yes.
I need, when you go in Maracas, you have police, you have army, you have a no noise, because I can't sit down here and hear some of these songs with the lyrics.
You
know what I'm saying? That may hit my senses, you know?
Yeah.
So you go that zone of peace, Botanical Gardens. You have the police there. You could park your car. You don't have to worry about it. Zone of peace again. We need these zones of peace for our mental well-being. So just a medication. Yeah. You need minister planning involved. You need national security involved. So when you get a zone of peace, I know I could go with my kid, park my car, and just relax into Savannah.
Okay.
You know?
All right. So now we'll just take a little break and we'll come back, because this is a very interesting discussion.
Right. Zones of peace. I like that.
Yeah.
All right, folks, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, and we're back with you, Dr. Brittany Dean and our guests. We do have some questions that came in. They may not be related to the topic, but
I can answer them very quickly.
So people don't get an anxiety attack. Hi, Doctor, I am a 45-year-old female. For the past 4 days in the morning time, I have a headache behind my head, not my neck. Can you help me? And what is it? Thank you.
Right. So, of course, we are saying that this is a 45-year-old female. We need a lot more in terms of her history to make a complete diagnosis. But it can be due to so many different things. Are you, do you suffer with migraines? Is this a normal thing for you? And if it is not, I really do suggest that you go and get it checked out by your physician. But like Doctor was saying here, stress and anxiety can manifest in certain ways. So is it that you have many stressful events going on? You know, did something change in your recent history? Did you something change in your physical activity or your diet? So headaches in the morning time can be due to many different things. And of course, we always say you do need a thorough medical history and physical examination to make a diagnosis. So if it is something that is bothering you, I do suggest that you do go by your physician and get it checked out.
All right, this person sent a picture of their foot. One of their feet is swollen. And what do you think it could be? If you want to look around, you could see.
I am seeing. Wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. And of course, like I said, we do need context. Does this person have any other comorbidities? Do they have diabetes, high blood pressure? Did they get stung or do they have allergic reactions to insect bites or anything in general? Because that does look like an allergic reaction. And I have seen that before. I've seen somebody come in with an ant bite and their foot was swollen like that. So if it is an allergic reaction that big, I definitely think that it needs to be checked out. But again, it can be several different things. Is it edema? Do they have any type of heart disease or lung disease? Because this can manifest in many different ways. And one of them is edema in the legs or edema in the foot as well. So definitely, I'm seeing it right here. Please do go and get it checked out. Get a thorough physical examination done. And of course, they will do investigations further.
All right. Mm-hmm. Continue.
Right, so continuing with our discussion today, I think Dr. Ram Singh had another question.
Mm-hmm. Right, so we were speaking about your patient with panic attacks, and I wanted you to distinguish between panic attacks versus anxiety disorder. Are they the same? Do they encompass one another? What is... How do you differentiate?
Well, it's similar, but with the panic attack, at that intense moment, mm-hmm. you have a period like 5 minutes, 15 minutes or onward where you have such an intense feeling, you feel like you're going to die. You feel like your air will cut off, mm-hmm. your heart will stop, you know, your heart will race and, you know, you will mm-hmm. collapse. And basically, you have that impending feeling that something is going to happen to you. Mm-hmm. With anxiety now, it may be just like a feeling of dread. Like, you know, it's not that intense. A dread like mm-hmm. I can't come out of the house. Mm-hmm. I might get an accident. Mm-hmm. I might, you know, I might go to work and somebody might insult me. So it's so, and you have that feeling of not just dread, but not just something happening, mm-hmm. but a worry about something. Yes. So it's about their worry. Now, some people who have panic attacks, when they come in out of the house, they're going to worry now that they may get one. Mm-hmm. And that itself will cause that person's problem to socially isolate.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's really reassuring the person coming to you guys to say, hey, your heart's good, everything is good, thyroid is good, because you do thyroid tests even for patients who are depressed.
Yes.
Right. Coming in, we tend to do that. Mm-hmm. People who have... even some psychotic illness, we do VDRL tests for syphilis and cases of neurosyphilis. So, and even some persons, if it's a recent onset of strange behavior, mm-hmm. we may recommend an MRI to rule out physical things in certain cases.
Right.
Other cases, it's clear-cut. This is depression, mm-hmm. probably stimulated by, you know, the genetic factors or an adverse event.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had a patient with who got assaulted. And that patient now has post-traumatic stress disorder.
Wow.
So you remember after about 3 months, this thing manifested, mm-hmm. where the patient is at work and suddenly actually smelling the odor of mm-hmm. the person who assaulted her.
Right.
So it just comes. And with that patient cannot work.
Yeah.
So it's like this intrusive thought that comes in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the flashbacks of the event. And another patient who actually had the flashback where they tied that lady and dragged her in the floor. So imagine she now, we try to integrate her back into our workplace. But here you are working and then you are reliving Right, you're absolutely living the event. Yeah, and you see with Trinidad, with crime and victims of crime, thankfully we have the victim support service. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, you know, we always need more staff.
Yes.
You always, because remember, this is something that could go on.
Yeah.
And you see, in Trinidad, it's a little difficult to treat these individuals because another country may have certain criminal events occurring far in between.
Yeah.
In Trinidad, it's a daily event. So you may be a victim of crime, but your social media coming up with all sort of things, radio, TV next day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a constant reminder. Yeah. This is why sometimes it's a little more challenging to manage persons with post-traumatic stress disorder, with victims of crime especially.
Yes, and I think that even not relating to crime and an incident I had myself, even things like car accidents, that it can definitely manifest years after.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I could not drive for an entire year after having a car accident, just because the impact or any loud noise, I would relive the moment.
So
I definitely understand, and I am empathetic to people who are experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder. And while we're on a topic such as this, and of course women, they tend to be more victims of assault. How is it, or why do you think women are more likely to be diagnosed with things like anxiety or depression? I mean, for PTSD, I feel like yes, because they are more prone to being assaulted, etc. But is there any other reason that you think women would be more likely to be diagnosed?
Well, the thing is, women seek help more.
Yes.
So this is one factor. A woman may have something not going well. She says, listen, I can't take care of my kids at all. Let me reach out for help. She may reach out for help by her siblings, by her, you know, her other friends who they could chat, and she may reach out for help in clinic more.
Okay,
so men are hesitant to come to our clinics.
Yeah.
So that's why it's difficult sometimes
especially mental health clinics.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Especially
mental health. So you see, so an unemployed male may stay home, may start to drink, may start to abuse his wife.
Yes.
You know, so he hits his wife, he gets vexed because suddenly she's the one making the money. Or sometimes if you can't mind your children, you may have thoughts about harming yourself and your kids.
Yeah.
So that is something where we need to get these individuals out. Now, if you're working in a, I have always recommended, if you are working in a company that closed down, you should still have their employees, the EPA services, reach out for these individuals up to a year after a company has dissolved.
Yes.
Because Mittal, remember that company, and then when they left, a guy committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
If you had we are bringing that guy in for counseling, letting him meet other individuals who were also undergoing that, retrain them in something, they will feel, instead of just staying home and wallowing in your thoughts and hating the world and hating this one and that one, they now engage with other persons, other males in a similar situation. So they get strength from each other.
Yes,
so this is something I think we have to be pushing forward in Trinidad more, how to engage the males.
I think a lot of people aren't aware about coping mechanisms and ways that they themselves can help that how they feel, you know. Could you expand on that for us? Tell us a little bit about what we could do to help ourselves, our mental health.
Okay, so you have siblings in our home. May have the same trauma, but one may not need help. So the resilient, your own nature, your own makeup, you may same sort of trauma, and that person could go on honky-dory and happy. Another one could succumb. So the individual's makeup and the temperament of children, you could sometimes see it in some kids cry all the time, another one may be full of joy. So the makeup of an individual is something which determines their support system. And usually, as I mentioned, intergenerational homes, if you don't have that, long ago you could go for support by granny, or even I still love the traditional home with a male female figure there, where if you get licks from mommy, daddy will come and cuddle you. Or if daddy buff you, mommy. It's like good cop, bad cop.
Yes.
So you don't just get jamming from one individual. You have to have another individual there to pick, mommy probably the dad because she want to do better. So I always like, even granny, you want to granny. Yeah. So you need that where you now know you could go for help.
Right.
And now you have to now expand that individual. Who else could I get help from?
Mm-hmm.
So the church, the temple. But so this is something that, well, you see, what I've seen now, I've spoken to young persons. Why you didn't go to the minister and said, he said, but look what's going on in the ministry. Look what's happening with people's children being interfered with.
Mm-hmm.
So when children are bombarded with the evils of what's happening, pedophiles, etc., in the whatever, you know, even coach, teachers, doctors, so they lose faith in the system.
Yes.
So you have to now swing it in such a way that there are dangers all over, but you could get your good from it. So I still like people to go to church, children, to learn one discipline, where you sit down there, you might like it, but you learn it to sit down for an hour and keep your skin quiet. Plus, something subconsciously goes in. So when you probably want to thief something later on, you're in some office job and you hear all of you thief, you might think back, hey, thou shalt not steal.
Yeah.
So that experience, I mean, so could still have. So I still like a religious experience. I always like sports because you see sports, if you win as a team, you learn to, jubilance. If you lose, you learn to comfort each other. Hey, we'll try again, boy. We'll beat CIC next match. So sports is important. And what I find we have been losing in schools is playtime. So I have spoken to previous ministers of education, and I say, stop all work at 2 o'clock and let the children play from 2 to 3. Let them just run wild, make noise. Some schools, they have, you can't shout and make noise in the corridor, you know. You are stifling the children's thing. Let them free up. And you see, why you let them free up? I say, OGT people need job. I will train OGT people to look at the child who is too violent. Look at the child who is timid. And we figure what's going on in that child's home.
Yes.
And there's where you observe the children interaction. Mm-hmm. So some of them might want to play. That's their nature. Others now don't want to play because they don't trust people. Others too violent. Those are the ones, you know, have to now start to tame them. So playtime in our educational system is something I'm hoping we could bring back. You know, the teachers say, they're sweaty and they're too sweaty to come to class. Okay, have it from 2 to 3. So they're going home after.
Yeah.
The other thing where we miss too is after school. Some of these working mothers, single mothers, they don't reach home till 5. Those children are going out in society, being influenced. You know, you call it the latchkey kids. They're the ones now will have to see about the younger ones.
Mm-hmm.
This is why years now I've been here. We have after school classes, after school events, let them play football. We have to get those things. We hear talk. We know all the answers, you know.
Yeah.
But to have it moving on. So I know I don't have any idle children going home in an area where I am thinking that child is still in school till 5, mommy come in. So mommy will now come for the child when mommy comes from work.
Yeah.
You have a couple of messages there.
Okay.
Somebody said, I think the barber shop is a great place for men to talk. What do you think about that, doctor?
Yes, definitely. Barbershop is a place where they could speak. Also sporting events.
Mm-hmm.
They come and speak. And you know, when I go to a bar sometimes, I see the bartender.
The bartender is also like a counselor.
Yeah, as a counselor. And sometimes the men, they bar talk their wives. Their wives nagging them. Their wives this. Their wives that. Yes, a place. Yeah. But where there may be an area, we don't want the lonely drinker just over drinking.
Mm-hmm.
If you come and talk and vent and go home, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Once it reaches a problem where you're just drinking, you're alone.
You don't want to speak.
Yes.
There's a video I saw on social media where they have these women, they would just go somewhere and just scream, you know, just have the scream. And sometimes people just need to.
Oh, I think we need that in China.
Since the days of the Beatles, when the Beatles were existing, that band, there was a psychologist offering scream therapy where they would just go and scream and get it out and, you know.
Wow.
That's a short break. Of course, Freedom 106.5 FM gives you live ball-by-ball coverage of the ICC T20 World Cup. Of course, today from 10:30 a.m. we have England clashes with Scotland. And tomorrow we will from 10:30 a.m. as India faces Ireland. Right, of the glory, then Australia versus Oman at 8:30 p.m. Right, enjoy all the unforgettable moments of the ICC T20 World Cup with Freedom 106.5 FM and experience the drama, the tension, and the sheer joy of cricket in its purest form. Live coverage complements Sheikh Leisure Limited. right? So we are here, and as, of course, we have about 7 more minutes as we continue with our topic, the lunchtime doctor.
Right, and this conversation is very interesting. I think you brought a lot of insight and a lot of things that people do not know. I mean, I learned a lot of things today in terms of children. And, of course, are there any ways that you think, I mean, we mentioned a lot of things in terms of children and how we should implement all these strategies. But when it comes to us as adults, it is very difficult. And I would say this because I feel like we all live it, to just take ourselves out of certain stressful situations. Yeah. So what would be your advice to adults who are suffering with anxiety or depression? And what are some coping mechanisms we as adults, I mean, even if we are in a stressful situation, what can we do to help mitigate some of the stress?
Okay, so besides the diet, the exercise,
yes,
the what we try to do is look at your thoughts.
Yes.
Why are you in that unhealthy thoughts? Because I have a girl right now. She has 3 boyfriends, and every single boyfriend, not at the same time, but every single boyfriend, it was the same issue she was having.
Yes.
So I said, but you're not learning anything. Mm-hmm. So a failure to learn with relationships, how to look for infidelity, how to know if a guy pushes you or slaps you, you now need to don't stay into that situation. Mm-hmm. So sometimes some persons, they are, for instance, I'm looking at domestic violence. If a girl grows up in a home where she sees domestic violence, she accepts it. So she may think, and there's a what you call traumatic bonding theory. Mm-hmm. So she mistakes love for licks. She equates love and licks. Mm-hmm. So if I don't get licks, if I don't get cussed, it means he don't love me, because she grew up like that. So individuals who grew up in a home where the home is filled with a toxic parents, you find they may accept a level of toxicity in their life and think this is normal. It's so you now have to go into the minds of that individual and say, let's try and change that mindset. Mm-hmm. This is not right. And I try to say, look how you're feeling in a situation. Are you feeling rotten and bad energy and you have all these somatic symptoms?
Yes.
And you're having these symptoms, and obviously it's affecting you, the fact that you reach here. So then we now try to go into their mind and tell them now, what is the unhealthy thoughts? Why? Mm-hmm. What is your thought pattern? So we do like what you call the cognitive behavior therapy. And once we could identify that you have unhealthy thoughts or thoughts that you're trapped in, we try to tell you there are other ways to do it. So basically, it's what you call a mind thing. So some people come behavior therapy, where we try to teach other behavior. Some people come where we have to teach that thought processes. Other persons come and just want to talk. They just like psychoanalytical talk and vent and all these things. So there are different ways where an individual could talk before you go to medicate. You medicate. And you see sometimes too, about 60% of persons who have a mental problem do not come to a psychiatrist or seek help. So it's a hidden phenomenon still.
Yes.
So they may go to you with neck. Women have migraines and neck pains.
Yes.
Men will have back pains. So sometimes they go present to a physical doctor, and you do all your tests. And when you see everything is okay and you can't explain it, you now have to think, is it a psychological effect? And this is where the government did do something called the MH gap system, which the United Nations, I think, tried to teach, and WHO, where we treat the general practitioners out there how to recognize these disorders and start treating them in the health centers.
Right.
So the stigma of coming to a psychiatric clinic is not there. You guys start treating it. So therefore, and your social worker there could do the counseling. And this is something where we try to change the ball game in the sense that, so therefore I feel more comfortable going, because if I go into the mad people clinic, all my neighbors will know that.
Yes.
So I used to do something when I was in Barataria clinic, where I and a colleague who lived in another region, you know, the regions are divided in terms of health.
Yes.
We used to exchange patients. Now, the high-ups wouldn't like that, because if you live in Barataria, why are you going down to Shogona's thing? Mm-hmm. But we did that because we realized the stigma of some persons coming to our clinic. They rather go elsewhere.
Yes,
so we had that as among doctors. Okay. We would do that, and, you know, you have to go through the staff sometimes. So therefore, the stigma of mental health prevents people from coming to us. And then and the coping mechanisms, as we see, besides letting them learn to have the healthy thoughts, we sometimes, for instance, let's see Alcoholics Anonymous, and you join that group, that 12-step program. There's a group of people there who look out for each other. So therefore, you go in a rum shop, the man in the area come and say, what are you doing there? You so we try to also involve them in sort of a group sessions if we could. We have to choose very carefully who we are, you know, putting them with. But they have to know if they're sharing a problem, they could come and talk and get strength from each other. And I always like to have like a buddy. Get your best friends to come. So if I give you, I like to give my patients journal. If I give you something to journal and come back to me with your thoughts. If you're not doing it, your best friend going to buff you and say, go back to Dr. Dayal Singh with your journal. You have to have to journal your thoughts.
Dr. Dayal Singh, I just want to thank you for sharing your invaluable knowledge with us here today. I think this is a conversation that needs to continue. So we will be having you on again, because definitely it is something that, like you said, it is something that is, it's so rampant nowadays, and nowadays, and people, we don't recognize it, we don't seek help. And of course, Dr. Ram Singh, thank you so much for being here.
It's
and
my pleasure.
This initiative by the Rotary Club, it really is something special, and I'm grateful that I could have been a part of it today. So thank you both for being here and sharing your knowledge with us. Okay.
Thank you very much, folks. Of course, you've been listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, Dr. Brittany Dean, and a very special guest brought to you with the kind compliments of LSA Healthcare Services Limited. Of course, we have Dalton Brown, Eye Experts, and of course, Health City Cayman. Do enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll catch you tomorrow right here on The Lunchtime Doctor.
For the past 10 years,